We're either going to get a bunch of like new listeners or we're going to lose everybody.
Instantaneously.
Instantaneously.
Black Market Toast Podcast, where we take a piece of media out of the cupboard, dust it off, toast it up, and serve it as something completely new. This is episode number 80, and in this episode, we'll be jumping off of Coupling, which is a British sitcom from the 90s. Basically, 90s rom-com, but British style, and really the grandfather of all other 90s rom-com
things. I thought it came out in like 2003.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay, this is much older.
No, this is like proto-Friends.
Ah, got you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you could definitely see where Friends took some of this.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's not as direct.
Well, they attempted the shot-for-shot remake.
Oh, really?
They did 10 episodes on NBC. I believe it was NBC. And you can watch those on YouTube now, and they're awful.
I'm sure.
Because, you know, conversations that bawdy Englishmen and Englishwomen have in a bar are not conversations that Americans have in bars,
right?
At all?
No.
It doesn't work. Because it's the same conversations in American accents, and it does not work.
Right.
No.
Right. I mean, we're not as direct. Normally,
we don't necessarily have intelligent conversations about certain subjects, and most of what it is sexuality.
Yeah,
and they're direct and they're it's great. How much did you watch?
I watched the first three episodes.
Okay.
Because we got started, like, my wife and I were going to watch them together, and then we got, like, two or three episodes in, and then we, like, switched over to something else.
Fine.
It wasn't because we didn't like the show, it was just we watched this last night, let's watch something else tonight,
yeah.
And then we got on that show, and, you know, now we're on that show.
Fine. Well, this was one of the first things that we watched on BBC America, back when we had cable.
Right.
Way back in the day. And, And it was on at like 11 o'clock on BBC America every night.
Yeah.
And so my wife and I got used to falling asleep with Coupling on.
Yeah.
You know, and so it kind of became one of those tradition things.
Yeah. And that's cool. And I could see where, like, it's a good time waster show.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but at the same time, it's thoughtful. It
can be, yeah.
You have to pay attention to some things.
Yeah.
Like, especially, you didn't necessarily get to any of them, but there are episodes where it'll run you through the same scenario three times with different points of view.
Okay.
And the first time you watch it through this point of view, there are a couple things in there that are like, what the fuck is happening? And then the next one, it explains one of those things. And then the third one explains how all of it came together.
Got you. Yeah. Sonny has done that
okay.
a few episodes
yeah.
where you'll get like this character's point of view of events mm-hmm. and this character's point of view. And then, you know, of course, at the end, they're all telling like the same. They're all telling a story of what happened to like the lawyer or
some
other scenario where they're all just kind of telling their side.
And this was Stephen Moffat's romantic comedy series, and he ended up becoming the showrunner for Doctor Who in the Matt Smith era, which has the overarching season-long arcs.
Yeah.
And that kind of, you can kind of see that in this if you're looking for it, but yeah.
I mean, it's, if your style is to tell long-threaded stories.
Right.
That's going to be, I mean, it's going to run through whatever you do.
And in the comedy space, what that boils down to is callbacks to previous things,
right.
Which, as you know, is my jam.
Yeah.
In a comedy
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
So.
No, and I mean, it's, I, of course, the first couple episodes are a little hard to follow.
Okay.
Because they're telling the story of kind of how it all started.
Right, you know, right.
They're all dating each other, and then they break up, and then they pair off in some other way, and you're just like, okay. All right, this is a thing that's happening, so.
Yes, but, I mean, at the end of, I think, the first two seasons, there's only really one official couple.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, the other ones are, yeah.
Just in sleeping
weird
together.
Things. Yeah, and kind of, and then there's Jeff.
Yeah.
And
then there's Jeff.
and Jeff is the wild out there character.
Yeah.
Who has outlandish theories of the world. Yeah. And it's basically the conspiracy theory character, but with wild sexual conspiracy theories.
Yes, it is. And it's funny because most group of friends have that person that's just sort of in orbit around your group of friends, just sort of.
And if you don't know who that person is,
it's probably
you are that person.
Yeah, you are that person. It's true. But in that way, Jeff is very relatable, and mm-hmm. he's horribly insecure.
Yes,
and he doesn't want anybody talking about him. And he, you know, I don't know, but yeah, every group of friends. Everybody knows a Jeff.
Yes, yes.
You know, except Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff doesn't know he's Jeff.
No. Yeah. But, yeah, and Jeff's there for three seasons, and then Jeff leaves after the third season.
Oh, okay.
And so they, at that point, there's only one more season after that, and they bring in Oliver, who is a guy who runs a comic book shop, so he's obviously awkward.
Yeah.
And they kind of make him into a love interest for Jane and awkward. And it's kind of weird.
Huh.
And a Doctor Who fan. But, you know, that all ties in together.
So Moffat wasn't doing Doctor Who.
Oh, no.
Okay.
This was about 10 years prior to him doing Doctor Who.
Gotcha.
But okay. Yeah, there's definitely the...
I didn't know if he was let me kind of, you know, suck my own dick.
No, I mean, that was before Doctor Who rebooted at all.
I got you.
You know, it was a shout back to, you know, 60 through 80s Doctor Who, which was, you know, a huge part of British culture.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Even without it being rebooted.
Okay, yeah, like I said, I didn't know. Like I said, I thought this show was in, like, the early 2000s.
No, it was early 90s. Let's see here. You can talk, and I will...
Okay.
I will on my phone.
Yeah, so, because I was like, well, this is sort of like... It's like they did a takeoff of Friends. I didn't know they had done the American version of it, though.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that was probably mid-90s, because, you know, it was... Just how things work.
Yeah. Apparently 2000? No, that's...
See, I was looking at Wikipedia and it said like 2000, 2003.
Okay. I thought it was before Friends, but apparently not.
Yeah. Well, and that's,
it
you know...
2000 to 2004.
Sorry. As I was doing some research, I was like, we thought this was the predecessor to Friends. It's actually the, like...
The better version of Friends.
Yeah, the better version of Friends, because Friends was kind of wrapping up during that time.
Yeah, so it ran 2000 to 2004, and they tried to make the U.S. version in 2003.
Yeah. Anybody decent in the cast?
Yes, actually.
Really?
Let's see here. Colin Ferguson.
Okay.
People you would recognize if you saw them.
Ah, okay. Like,
but yeah, Colin Ferguson
was
Patrick.
The heavyweight. Okay,
was Patrick. That wasn't even the lead. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was strangely cast.
And
Jeff wasn't awkward enough.
Not very well received, apparently.
They didn't do a good job of capturing the original characters, but I guess they were trying to not
Americanize them a little bit.
To Americanize them a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, and doing that is so hit or miss. I mean, everyone's going to point to The Office and say, well, you know, if you change some of the characters around, you'll make it a better show, but it doesn't.
Right.
Here's the thing, you need a a real comedic talent, like Steve Carell to pull that off.
You need
and the, Rainn Wilson.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you have to hit on the cast,
right? And you have to hit perfect.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have Krasinski, you have to have Jenna Fisher, you have to have that entire ensemble has to be up to that par,
right? Even down to the background characters,
right?
Who to me, in a lot of ways, made the show,
right?
Because there wasn't an uninteresting one in the bunch.
Right. I mean, and even if you get, you know, top flight freaking talent, if you cast freaking Joel McHale as Roy, it's wrong.
Right, exactly. Not that Joel McHale isn't funny. He is. I love Joel McHale.
He is not the geeky freaking IT guy.
Right.
You can't cast freaking younger Ryan Seacrest as the geeky IT guy.
Right.
It's just
not believable.
No. Yeah.
I'm not sure who you could have cast in that role. Current Rainn Wilson with his weird beard.
Chris O'Dowd.
Yeah, that's true. You should have, if you're going to remake the IT crowd.
Hell, they got Richard Iwade. Why wouldn't they just bring over
Chris O'Dowd?
Chris O'Dowd was coming over to America anyway.
Yeah, they really should have just redone the show. You know what? Just fuck it. They should have just shown the BBC version on.
Yeah, him. Yeah. But, you know, when they tried to do that with the friggin' 90s Doctor Who movie on Fox, it went horribly, horribly wrong because they tried to change it for American audiences with a British cast.
Can't do that.
And Eric Roberts. which was the failing point of the entire premise.
Eric Roberts isn't going to make anything better. He's not even the most famous Roberts.
So then we end up with, you know, one Fox TV movie with the Eighth Doctor in it and nothing else. There are radio plays and there are books with you know, Adventures of the Eighth Doctor. And that's why when Doctor Who reboots, there's a big hole. And you start with the Ninth Doctor and he talks about the Time War and he refers back to things, but it's not fleshed out.
Right.
And then there was a prequel to the 50th anniversary episode where Paul McGann comes back and plays the Eighth Doctor for like a 5-minute segment. And it's like, holy shit, I want more of this.
Nice.
Because he was amazing. Huh. And it, now we need, you know, can we just time back, you know, time warp back and give us friggin' actual Paul McGann,
Eighth Doctor
stuff. And they'll never do it, but it would be amazing because his delivery and basically he took his vision of the character from the TV movie and kind of meshed it with Eccleston's Ninth Doctor.
Okay.
To make it a little more serious. Because he was like this Victorian freaking long-haired hippie guy.
Right.
And then, you know, he was much more... The Time War had worn down on him. He was still that same character, but he was weathered. And it was showing him going in and making the sacrifices he needed to make that war stop.
Got you.
Which, you know, this is Coupling, not Doctor Who.
Yeah.
We swear.
Sort of.
We're talking about British shit.
Yeah, pretty much. But, yeah, and I mean, it really has been hit or miss in bringing British shows over.
Yes.
So, I'm not...
Mostly miss.
Mostly miss. Yeah, it's true.
The fucking quiz show with the lady in the middle.
Oh, my God, Weakest Link.
The Weakest Link. The Weakest Link. That had a good, like, 1-year run.
It became... here was the thing. Like, it became, like, a proto-meme.
Yeah.
Like, she was just kind of a meme.
Yeah.
And it was popular.
And that only lives for about a year.
Yeah.
Until it becomes... Well, that's fucking old.
Right. But, because she... I mean, it was a one-trick gimmick.
Yes.
You know, she just had her little, like, curt Britishness.
Yes.
And that was it.
Yeah. Oddly, what has ported over well... is reality TV.
Yeah.
Because Survivor came from Britain. Freaking American Idol, you know.
Yeah, Pop Idol
became American Idol. Freaking The X Factor came over.
Yeah.
Britain's Got Talent.
Yep. Which, I mean, that is one of my, I will admit, America's Got Talent is one of my, like, that's our guilty pleasure show. So okay. It is. I mean, it's one of those things. Okay. Patricia and I, yeah, we always watch it together. It's more out of tradition this time. We always pick a favorite act. That act never wins. We're always pissed. And then we begrudgingly watch the last two or three episodes.
Yeah, I hate that I watch the audition episodes of The Voice, but I do every time.
See, I never do.
You know, this is absolute crap. Fuck. I have to watch
the thing. Okay,
but I never get into it enough to watch the following. Yeah, I can't watch it through the rest of the season.
See, and it's,
and I understand that this is not. Nobody makes it big off The Voice.
No,
period. It's like Star
long
Search.
Shot to make it big off of American Idol. Yes, I mean, yes. You can count on your hands how many people made it big truly off of American Idol. Right.
In either way, American Idol made it big off of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, but that's the funny thing about the singing shows, and it's probably because, funny enough, given our current like situations, I'm a trained singer.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a trained singer. So we don't want to watch people who have equal to inferior talent than us, like up on stage butchering songs I like.
But you come see me anyway.
You don't play songs I like.
Oh, there you go. That's the key.
But
play shitty music. Joe will like you.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You've got to play stuff I in no way would ever sing.
No tie to whatsoever.
Oh,
crap. Well, we were thinking of putting a cover song in our next set. I guess we'll
make
have to
it
not do
random.
That.
Yeah. But, so just for us, like the singing shows never did it. Like I auditioned for American Idol, which is funny enough.
Well, you were in a boy band, so
yeah,
well, you know, it kind of fits.
No, but that was the thing. But this is what happened. We were freshmen in college. American Idol came out and we watched these, you know, kids essentially. Yeah. And we're like, there's like 10 of us sitting in our...
I can do that.
Yeah, there were 10 of us sitting in our college music department going, fuck, we're better than them. So all 10 of us went to Atlanta and tried out. And some of us made it a lot further than others. Mm-hmm. But we were like, well, shit, like, these kids aren't that good.
Right.
You know?
But they have a compelling backstory.
Right, they have a compelling backstory, or they're pretty. And, you know,
yeah. They can get votes from America.
Right, which
which gets you past the judges because... Yeah. It's a popularity contest because they want people to want to vote for people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. Well, according to like the, you know, these music teachers who do my scoring in these competitions, I'm like the second best singer in the region.
So there.
But I'm not good enough to make American Idol because I'm not pretty and...
and I wasn't... beaten mercilessly as
right.
a child.
Yeah, and I'm
damn
just
it. Why did I not?
I'm just a fella from a middle class house.
Why did I not have the forethought
whose parents
to
liked
my
each
brain
other.
To get beat in?
Yeah,
to help my music career
right.
in 10 years.
Right. So yeah, nobody's gonna vote for me because I'm like the default setting genetic or like generic white guy. Like
hey.
Shit, middle class house, parents like each other. Like it's. Yeah. You know, whatever.
Didn't find your voice in the church. Yeah, yeah.
I did, oddly enough, which is funny. Like, I learned to sing in church. I sang in church for a long time.
I did, too. I was in choir in the basement of some church in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I remember.
It's funny because that was my side hustle in college. Like, I was a paid choir singer.
Oh, okay.
Like, St. Philip's Episcopal Church, which is a gorgeous church. It looks like a damn wedding cake inside. They paid 4 college singers, 1 for each vocal part,
mm-hmm.
and we were getting paid like $150 a week to show up to rehearsal and show up on Sunday. And we got all the solos, and it was our job to make sure that the rest of the choir knew what the hell was going on.
And you managed to pass through the threshold without catching on fire every time.
Yeah.
Which is impressive.
Every time. Yeah,
it's hard to hold in the flames.
I put on
it's very hard to hold in the flames sometimes.
Well, I was in my special black robe.
Okay, yeah.
Usually wearing like shorts and a t-shirt underneath.
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously. And, but, except for that one time the AC went out, and it was like, I'm just in, like, drawers. Like, my black robe. Dude, it's Charleston. It's September. It's still 95 degrees, and the AC went out.
Just don't let anything happen where it suddenly kicks on, and I'm standing on the vent, and...
Hey, look at my dong!
Dongs for Jesus.
Yes. Dicks out for Christ. Listen, if we could do it for Harambe, we could do it for Jesus.
Okay.
But yeah, but that was...
Is that what I should use to open this episode? Dicks out for Christ.
Wow. We're either going to get a bunch of like new listeners or we're going to lose everybody.
Instantaneously.
Instantaneously. Oh, man, yeah. But yeah, but that was my side hustle. Like, I got paid $150 to show up for like an hour and a half choir rehearsal and an hour and a half church service. So, mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, older folks who still like to sing but don't quite have the ability.
But somehow haven't picked it up in 30 years of singing at church.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But that was my thing. Like, and if they started singing terribly, I would just kind of up my volume. Yeah. Like, I can use my good choral blend and, you know, round off my vowels and everything. And then if they kind of start getting out of whack, I just kind of, like, sort of turn to them a little and sing towards them so they can hear the pitch.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, and that was, like I said, it was a cool job. And it helped me musically, you know, because... If you've ever, I don't know how familiar you are with, like, Episcopal services or Anglican services.
Not really.
So, if you're the cancer, which is what I was, like, you essentially...
You are a cancer, yes.
Yeah, thanks. But you essentially have to sing these prayers.
Okay.
And so, they'll play things on the organ, and they'll play a chord.
Okay.
Which is generally A.
Okay.
And then I would have to sing this entire prayer on A. And you had to be dead-ass on pitch, because at the end... The organ comes back in with an A on top of you, and if you're off and the organ's on, you look like an asshole. So, like, that helped me, like, keep relative
keep your pitch.
Yeah, because to this day, I can hit a 440 A out of nowhere because I know exactly where, like, what it's supposed to sound like. It just got drilled into my skull.
Okay.
But,
yeah. Meanwhile, if I don't have a backing track, there's no way I'm on pitch. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Might sound okay, but good luck figuring out what key I'm in, because I'm not in one.
How'd you get in C-sharp minor? That flat. Sucks to be, yeah.
Half a flat C-sharp minor.
Fuck. You're playing some damn 20th century like John Cage music. Like, what are we doing here?
I don't even know how to do that on a guitar.
Yeah. Dude, my capo's slanted. Like, I don't know how am I even doing this? Like, it's half on and turned to the side.
Okay, so I pulled out a lute because that's the only thing that tunes properly.
Yeah, pretty much. But, yeah, or you could just be, like, this blues band that I liked in England that I've seen several times. The dude has, it looks like a Halliburton briefcase.
Okay.
And he's a harmonica player, and he's freaking amazing. But he opens up this briefcase.
All the tuned harmonicas.
He has a harmonica in every key. It's amazing. So, like, oh, this one's in F. Let me grab my F harmonica and just start going nuts on that thing.
We have a harmonica in the key of first act.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have a harmonica in the key of we're not getting too fancy. We're not overthinking harmonica. No.
It's a harmonica.
Yeah. Like, I didn't even know they made tuned harmonicas.
No.
I just thought, well, the harmonica is an awesome instrument because I can go down to, like, Mass General Store and pay, like, $8 for one.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll never go bad.
But apparently, it can get better.
Yeah, apparently. Well, no, I mean, like, his had, like, audio jacks in it. So, no,
so
I mean,
it was an electric harmonica.
It was an electric tuned harmonica. Yeah, nice, like, nice. I don't know what those cost, but they were cool as shit. So he just, you know, smacked the plug
in
that
thing.
He was
a professional harmonica player,
dude, if you ever heard this guy play, yes, he was. Sounded when he sang, like, if you turned your back and closed your eyes, he sounded like a 350-pound giant soul-singing black dude. Yeah. He was like a 5'7" chubby white guy from Yorkshire.
There you go.
Phenomenal voice. But going back to reality shows, it's people like that that make me realize, or that make me not watch those shows, because I'm like, they aren't the talented people.
No.
Like, Lyndon Anderson, who's the guy that I'm telling you about,
mm-hmm.
the dude's playing in a bar in England somewhere.
Right.
can sing the ass off of anybody on American Idol.
And the people who are at the reality shows are either the people who aren't going to put in the time and the effort to try to make it, right, or the people who have tried and freaking didn't, yeah, and now this is their last effort to do something.
Right. Well, it was like one of the guys that was on America's Got Talent last year. He had been signed to, like, Sony.
Mm-hmm.
And then was let go when he was, like, 19.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he's 30.
I mean, and he's still holding on to that dream.
Still holding on to that dream.
You know, he got that contract, and it baited him, but he hasn't been able to do anything with it for 10 years.
Right.
But to me,
all of a sudden now, like, Sony's going to think, oh, well, maybe we messed up.
Probably not. Yeah.
I mean, and I hate to say it, but, like, there are people that I went to school with that are still in their, I mean, they're in their mid to late 30s,
mm-hmm,
still chasing that shit. And, I mean, I understand doing what makes you happy.
Yeah, yeah.
But at some point, you're going to have to realize it won't work out for you.
Right. It's like, you know, we're just getting started with it. I'm in my 40s, but I'm not chasing it as
this
a
is
career.
More, yeah, but y'all's is more of a passion project,
yes,
and more,
yes,
of a fun thing to do on the
it'd
side.
It'd be cool if it paid some money.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Right. But yeah, but it's
you're not
it's
it
side
for
hustle for everybody.
Yeah, it's side hustle.
Everybody has day jobs,
yeah,
and you know, it's
half of them have other bands.
Yes, yes, yes. Half have other bands. Yes.
Yeah. So I mean,
yeah, and sadly, it, in the state of the local scene here, the other bands that they have are cover bands, and that's where the money is.
Of course, it,
because
yeah,
more people want to go to the bar and listen to a live jukebox,
yeah,
then go and listen to actual creative output and new things.
Well, I mean, and that's our country. We're like South Park really played it best. Like, we're a nostalgia country at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we like familiar.
Mm-hmm.
We like stuff we've heard before. I don't know why we got so damn uncreative as a country, but we want member berries. Like, we want, oh, remember, you know, remember is, Journey? Oh, Journey. I like Journey.
Which is why it was so comforting every night at 11 o'clock on BBC America when Coupling would come on. See how I did that? Boom!
Yes.
Wrapped it just back around.
We just did a full 180, 360 on that one.
We managed to tie it back together.
Yes, we did.
So, we can't go anywhere from there.
We really can't.
So, yeah, we...
That perfect 180, we stuck the landing.
Yeah, we landed
now,
it, yeah.
And now we throw our arms up like a proper gymnast.
Oddly, there are three people standing over in the corner with tens over top of their head.
Yeah.
Don't know where they came from.
No, but thank you, Russian judge.
Woohoo! Yeah. Well, they threw his out.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's the other three guys. Yeah, so we barely talked about Coupling, but that's where we jumped off of, and that is how we do this podcast.
Yes.
So, what would you like? Do you have anything in
mind? I don't really
mind?
Have anything in mind. I know there were a couple of things that you were sort of, like, waiting to do, or...
Okay, well, I don't have those in mind right now.
We could always do Infinity War. It'll be about 2 or 3 weeks.
I don't know if I will have seen it.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, I don't know if I will have seen it, because we're going to be busy. My wife's moving locations for her business this weekend, so
which is good.
So I don't know if I will have seen it. God. So now you're putting me on the spot because you don't have anything.
Yeah. That's my 180.
Boom.
Boom.
Let's see here.
Well, no, I just remember I thought it was a couple of podcasts ago. We were like, oh, you know, I want to do this, but
yeah,
you know, let's put this on the back burner and do this first.
Right, but I can't think off the top of my head what those things were. Shit. You want to do some Sanrio?
Sanrio?
It's the company that did Hello Kitty. Agretzko is on Netflix.
Okay.
And it's pretty awesome.
Sure. We can get weird with it.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Because if you were going to put me back on the spot, 20 years ago, DMX's first record came out.
Yeah,
I could talk about DMX for a while.
So let's definitely do Agretzko.
Okay.
And that just came out on Netflix, and you can binge through the entire season. It's like 10 episodes, but they're like 15 to 20 minutes each.
Oh, okay, cool. So it's Adult Swimmy. in that regard.
Yeah, yeah. And it's Sanrio, but it's edgy Sanrio, and it's you'll enjoy it. And we won't go into it now.
Because Hello Kitty, it's like, what's up, cat? It's got a little edge to it.
I'm not going to talk about it because that's next time. Okay. And I am... I don't know. I am at revelator.rocks on Instagram and at r3v3l8r on Twitter. And at Woodle is still there, but I don't use it. And...
I'm still that Joe you know on Instagram. I'm that Joe you know on Instagram.
For your one-stop source for all dog pics.
Pretty much. And probably some vacation pictures and some random time to go golfing.
And I am going to have to edit the shit out of the decision-making process at the end there. And we will talk at y'all next time. Tear down, waste time, right?